It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up on Central Time, we continue our summer music series set list. Today we'll feature the Milwaukee rock band Sat Night Duets.
But first, it's time for our weekly review of state news. We learned this week that Governor Walker was, in fact, under criminal investigation during the first John Doe probe, which he'd previously denied.
In other news, Iron County officials believe there will be a new company stepping in to develop a mine in northern Wisconsin.
And U.S. Representative Sean Duffy began his campaign for re-election this week as he and Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan spoke at an event in Wausau.
We're joined now by Nora Hurdle, public issues reporter for the Wausau Daily Herald. Nora, thanks a lot for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with this echo of the John Doe probe. Questions of whether Governor Walker had initially been under investigation. It turns out he was, though no charges were filed in that part of the case against him or anyone else over this real estate deal. How did we find this out this week?
One of his former aides, Cindy Archer, has filed a lawsuit against the DA that was pursuing that case. And in records that were filed this week, it turned out that Walker and two other people were the target of the initial probe, and that was in 2010. And that closed 3 years later after six people were charged with a variety of different things.
But the governor himself never charged. They let go of that part of the investigation earlier on, it sounds like.
Right, yep.
So what have we been hearing since this came out? What has Governor Walker or his campaign said about this?
There's a quote that I've seen a few times from his spokeswoman, Ashley Strong. I think it's a really great quote. I'm going to read it to you. It's another example of the politics involved in this process as people who cannot prove things in a court of law are attempting to win in the court of public opinion. So, I mean, I'm sure this fuels whatever opinions people already have about Walker. So people who felt all along that he was being unfairly targeted can feel that, that this is further proof of that. But on the other side, people that thought he was suspicious to begin with are a little bit justified that he was the target at the very beginning.
So one of those litmus test issues, people on each side reading it the way that fits the way they thought of it before the news came out.
Right.
Now, in another big story this week, officials from Iron County said they anticipate a new developer for a mine in northern Wisconsin. We thought was done. Gogebic Taconite had stepped away from that after a lot of controversy up there. What do we know about this new development so far?
There's a lot of things that are still up in the air, but it came out, I think, on someone's local blog last week that there was a meeting between the owners of the mine, which is LaPointe Iron Company. They met with county economic development officials about bringing in another mining company. There hasn't been many other details released after that, but I do know that when Gogebic Taconite backed out, the governor's office did say that they were hopeful that another company would step in.
Now, can you remind us about the last days of Gogebic Taconite pursuing that mine in northern Wisconsin? What ultimately led them to shut that down or shut down those plans?
I believe that it would have been more expensive for them to restore the wetlands that would be damaged in the mining process than they had expected. So they, in the process of mining, acidic minerals are released and cause damage to the surrounding ecosystem, and they would have to restore that. And the cost of making those restorations turned out to be higher than they were expecting when they initially set up shop up there.
And as you pointed out, this is in the talking about and maybe stage. Is anybody talking about a timeline to start developing a new plan for a mine up there?
Not that I've seen. I think it's still really preliminary. It's just the owners of the mine talking to officials in the county up there in Iron County.
We're talking to Nora Hurdle. She's with the Wausau Daily Herald. It's our weekly roundup of some of the big political news going on around the state of Wisconsin. Now, this is one from your area, Nora, one that you were covering yourself. U.S. Representative Sean Duffy speaking in Wausau, joined by Congressman Paul Ryan, fundraising, giving speeches. What can you tell us about the event?
It was the first one that I know of for the campaign, and Duffy's outreach coordinator did acknowledge that it was a little early for a congressman to be campaigning. This is for the 2016 election, and he was just reelected 8 or 9 months ago. So they acknowledged that it was a little early, pointing to the presidential race and how everyone's kind of fired up about the 17 Republican candidates. And he was up here with Paul Ryan, basically talking about the hottest issues of the day, Planned Parenthood, the deal in Iran. Also, Paul Ryan talked generally about the tone that Republicans need to take in the coming campaign season. I thought that was pretty interesting, talking about how the Democrats were going to be trying to divide them and that they needed to be careful that they didn't lose their cool and spit nails on television, is what he said. He didn't want them to be reactionary.
And this, you know, the presidential race is in full swing, and that feels kind of early. Are people in your neck of the woods really thinking, you know, congressional race 2016 at this stage of the game?
My impression is that a lot of folks around here that are interested are really behind Scott Walker. I presume that this is the case around the state, but he's our local guy. So every story that comes up, at least on our website with Walker, gets pretty good viewership. It's a pretty hot topic on a regular basis in our newsroom.
And Sean Duffy, of course, running for re-election as a Republican in Congress. Is there any talk yet about who a Democratic challenger might be?
No, I haven't seen anything. His last challenger was a woman who had been in her highest office was city council, and I think she won 40% of the vote. So I don't want to make any predictions, but he's got a strong support base in the area, and he lives in Wausau too. So there was a pretty good crowd at his event this week.
And you reported that Representative Duffy also had some comments about the Koch brothers, supporters, often donors to Republican causes.
Yeah, he did. Before the rally, he answered a couple questions, and another reporter asked him if he relied on the Koch brothers for funding because he was at a conference last week put on by the Koch brothers, and Duffy said, no, he relies on local folks in his district contributing to his campaign. But then when he stood up in front of those supporters, he said, you know, they get a bad rap, and I just want to say that the Koch brothers are freedom fighters. He called a couple other people freedom fighters at that event. He called our state representative Heaton a freedom fighter, too. So it was kind of I don't know if it was just a phrase he was using that day.
And both representatives looking ahead also to the big Senate race here in Wisconsin.
Yeah. Paul Ryan said that they would both be helping out Ron Johnson, who will face Russ Feingold in 2016. And, of course, Ron Johnson unseated Russ Feingold five years ago, and that was kind of an upset. So it'll be an interesting rematch, and Paul Ryan said he thought that would be the most exciting race in the state and that they would be out there helping him. He also mentioned that he was at a county fair or a smaller fair last weekend, and he and Ron Johnson had a goat milking contest that Paul Ryan won.
The lighter side of politics. Nora, thanks a lot for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
That was Nora Hurdle, public issues reporter for the Wausau Daily Herald, helping us review some of the biggest political stories from around the state this week for the Wisconsin News Roundup. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert.
We continue our new summer music series called Set List. We invited Wisconsin artists into the WPR studios for interviews and exclusive musical performances. They're airing every Friday at this time until Labor Day weekend.
The Milwaukee band Sat Night Duets has been releasing eclectic albums of rock and roll for nearly a decade. The band came to the WPR studios to play some new songs, talk about the Milwaukee sound, and share the story of filmmaker M. Night Shyamalan using one of their songs in his upcoming movie. Ben and Andrew, thanks so much for being in the studio with us today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Well, let's start by hearing a little bit about your band origin stories. This is a question fans of bands want to know. How did you get together? How did you meet each other?
We met in high school. We've been playing together for a very long time, almost a decade by this point. Andrew went to a different high school in Milwaukee, and our old drummer went to high school with me. I have actually known Steve, our guitar player, since kindergarten. So,
wow.
Yeah. An enduring friendship.
And did you guys know immediately that you had musical chemistry going on, or is this something that took a while to come out?
Well, I met them in high school, like Ben said, and we played in different competing high school bands. And I thought that they were cool, and then, you know, I learned that that wasn't as true as it seemed at the time. And we've just become friends, and we have pretty similar musical interests. So, yeah, I guess immediately, to answer your question.
It sounds like your music has all kinds of different styles, all kinds of different things going on sonically. Is there such a thing as a Sat Night Duet sound? If you had to describe it, how would you describe it?
Well, I usually tell coworkers that it's guitar rock. I think that, generally speaking, it's just a big rock sound with five different singers, depending on the song. And I think that the diversity is what gives it a sound. So maybe, I guess what I'm saying is you'd have to listen to it collectively, as opposed to just one song. Like Peel Away as a song, I don't think that really sounds like a lot of the songs that we play, but taken together with a bunch of other songs, it makes sense.
It's the middle of July, and I'm running out of time. Gotta get in the groove here, gotta make my move here, but I just wanna stay here, cause it's much more safe here. Let them peel away, they just peel away. I don't skate, they just peel away. Yeah, peel away.
No, when you got together and there were five of you, did you have to have a listening session and say, I like this, I don't like this, I want to sound like this, I don't want to sound like that? Did you have a brain meld in the beginning?
It wasn't very organized. If a riff would sound cool, we would kind of just build something around it. The way that a lot of the songs work now these days, because a lot of us are in different states, is one of us will do a demo for a song and then we'll just kind of write parts on top of it.
You're in different states.
Yeah.
Geographically.
Yeah.
Not mental state of mind.
Yeah.
How does that work?
I live in Chicago, so that's only an hour and a half. Joe, he plays drums with us. He's in Missouri, and that's tough. He doesn't come back as often.
But we're lucky to have Henry here with us today. He's just checking his phone.
Yeah.
We're trying to negotiate a contract with him right now. He wants $50 one-time fee, retainer fee.
And drummers are hard to come by, right? Isn't that the hardest spot to fill in a band, the drummer?
It's pretty easy. Henry's kind of lucky that he gets to play with this band.
You guys about putting together an album. How do you do that when you start that new process? How do you put it together?
Well, I usually send people emails like 15 times before anybody responds to me. Say, guys, this is gonna be so awesome, like this is gonna be the best thing we've ever done, and then nobody sends me an email, and like over the years people just become like less motivated to respond to me. But eventually, if you keep at them, things get done. People come over to your house in your basement and record guitar, and then your album is done.
So you're the ringleader, the cat herder, or whatever.
Yeah.
That'd probably be the most accurate way to say it, cat herder.
Heathen tour, 99, you broke up demons and dynamite, reissued singles club, poltergeist, as it had been seen with prophesized, aging alts, at risk youth, FBA ad execs, PG dudes, all saw the dollar signs in the news, and Tanya's college fund is subsidized.
Now you guys have Milwaukee roots. How many of you, there's five of you in the band, are all of you originally from Milwaukee? Because you're in Chicago now, Ben.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Milwaukee area, Wauwatosa.
So does that loom large at all in your music? I was watching your videos, and you've got shots of Milwaukee landmarks. I think I see Lake Michigan, Leon's. Is that a big deal to you to bring out some sense of Milwaukee and Wisconsin in your music?
I think part of it is just laziness. You know, if you think about what it means to make a music video, like if you want to go somewhere cool, you have to call them and tell them, hey, I'd like to film at your location. And that really kind of doesn't jive with, I guess, our attitude as a band towards making music in general. So it's usually just better if we can film things in our house or at parks or places that we can walk to.
Yeah. I've been told that we have a Milwaukee sound. I don't know what that means, really.
I was just going to ask you, what does that mean? It's a good thing, right?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's not overdone. There's something a little raw to it.
We're all pretty big fans of like Silver Jews and David Berman, and you know, we were poking around on the internet. We found his email address one time. There's some French article written about our band, like, awesome, like, and then you put it through the Google Translator and it's really funny, whatever it said about it, but it compared it to Silver Jews. And so this was kind of like, all right, we'll send him this. This is like an excuse to send him an email. And then, you know, he said like, oh, I like the song, which was, you know, great to hear from him. It was very nice. And then he said, Milwaukee is a great tradition of weird rock music, and then like De Kruijzen and the Frogs and stuff like that. And then I think what his comment was that Sat Night Duets was the Meat Puppets to Silver Jews Nirvana. So I don't know if that answers the question, but it made a lot of sense to me when I heard it.
He also told us to like send him an email if we get on MTV Unplugged.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's a good description of Milwaukee music.
Yeah.
I had to lose to know the feeling of the feeling missing.
So I heard that your song, The Three Wise Men, is going to be in the new M. Night Shyamalan film. How did that happen?
Robbie, one of our label bosses in New York, hooked it up. He did some networking for us out there and I guess ran into M. Night or one of his associates and found placement. It's the first song on the album, so I guess they must have just liked it.
Or they just didn't look too hard and just listen to the first song. who can we pay the least amount of money to let us put music in their videos? That said, we are really grateful for it, and it's cool.
Are you fans of his stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love Signs.
I realized that I've seen like all of his movies. I hadn't thought about it before.
We'll see about this one, though.
I'm sure it will be fantastic, and I would encourage everybody to go see it.
What is it?
It is called The Visit.
The Visit.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm a lonesome spaceman, set to float amongst the interstellar dust. When I cried out my Nike, that's how I knew that life on Earth was just a bust.
So you mentioned before that you have 5 singers in your band.
Yeah.
Now, I could be wrong, but I feel like most bands usually have 1 or 2. Why do you guys have 5?
Because it's less work to make an album. You only need to write 2 or 3 good songs if 5 people are writing songs. And hopefully you'd think that that would cut out all the bad ones. And hopefully that's true, but I don't know if it is.
And no one of us outshines another as a singer. I'd say we're all pretty much on the same playing field. There's no obvious front runner.
That's interesting, because in band dynamics, there can be that tension because someone wants to be in the spotlight all the time. Someone wants their songs to make it onto the album all the time. Do you feel like you have this co-op mentality?
I think what the best part about it is that, you know, we're in a band and all of us are really good friends, so it's just like hanging out every time you come to play, and that is always kind of at the forefront more so than any kind of interest in making something really powerful and creative. Not that we don't want to do that, but it's based on a friendship, and I think that's what's cool about it.
You guys have done some touring. What is that like?
It's a fun time, and I think the best way to look at it at this level, which is you're booking all your own shows, contacting bands yourself, is that it's kind of like a vacation, and you should just try to have a good time. And you can definitely tell, you know, different bands have different priorities when they're going on tour. But when we do it, we're just trying to, you know, play the best shows possible, try to see some new places, and you know, just network with other people. It's been really fun. We've met a lot of friends that, you know, we met just by sending them an email, which is very cool.
Can you tell me about the best gig you ever had and then maybe the worst gig?
Oh, I can tell you about several of the worst gigs. The best one, one of my favorite ones was the show we played in Minneapolis at a place called the Varsity Theater, which is like way bigger and nicer than anything that anyone should have let us play at. But we talked about earlier, our friend Robbie, he used to be in the band Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah. And he hooked it up so we got to play four shows with them, and one of the shows was there. And I just remember, you know, the crowd was great, and I thought we played really well. That was probably one of my favorite ones.
And then we played in Detroit. I forget what the name of the place
was. We've never been to Detroit or Michigan, actually.
Oh, wait, not Detroit. Cleveland. And, yeah, they charged you $2 for tap water, and one person came, and the other band showed up just to say that they were sick.
Do you guys... Do you have an idea about what success means to you? When that moment will be when you think, you know, we've made it?
I think we're really successful right now.
We have superseded all of my expectations for music.
Yeah, we're able to make records, play shows with people that we want to play with, and, you know, just hang out with some of my best friends. So I would say that's very successful.
All right, well, thanks a lot, guys. Thank you so much for coming in and performing in the studio today.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
The Milwaukee Band Sat Night Duets. You can catch their live. You can catch them live in Milwaukee at the 22nd at the Lucky Cat.
This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Last night, upwards of 20 million viewers turned out for the first GOP primary debate of the 2016 election, what looks to be a record-breaking television audience. The Fox News debate ran for 2 hours and included pointed questions to individual candidates about their histories and policies from three moderators.
The debate featured the top 10 candidates according to recent national polls. The seven remaining candidates debated on the same stage 4 hours earlier. Here's how that prime time debate began.
Is there anyone on stage, and can I see hands, who is unwilling tonight to pledge your support to the eventual nominee of the Republican Party and pledge to not run an independent campaign against that person? Again, we're looking for you to raise your hand now. Raise your hand now if you won't make that pledge tonight. Mr. Trump. Mr. Trump, to be clear, you're standing on a Republican primary debate.
I fully understand.
So the visual there, Donald Trump was the only one who had the hand up there and refused to rule out a third-party run. Coming up, we'll talk to Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reporter about Governor Walker's performance last night, how it positions him moving forward. First, for the big picture of last night's debate, David Friedlander joins us. He's a contributing writer at the Daily Beast. David, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with that first question there. What did you make of that? It's almost certainly aimed directly at Donald Trump.
That was a remarkable moment. I mean, and Trump sort of took it as if he was a heel in professional wrestling. You know, I mean, as Brett Baer said, I mean, that is the stage. It's a Republican primary debate stage. Where in the very city where the Republicans will nominate their candidate for president, to say you will not support the nominee, essentially handing the election to Hillary Clinton, was a remarkable moment. You know, I have to say, I thought maybe it was a little bit unfair. And I actually thought that, you know, I know Trump has been complaining all day that he was targeted by the moderators. And I actually don't think the moderators were probably hard enough on him. But that was a question they knew the answer to. I mean, he was clearly being singled out there. And it sort of set the tone for the whole evening.
And a lot of the interpretation of this event now from people, from Republicans, we're hearing some people say, yeah, Trump proved himself. He won the debate, from people who already supported Trump. A lot of mainstream Republicans saying he shot himself in the foot, especially with that answer, he's done. That's a lot of spread in the difference of opinion on that.
There really is. And I mean, it just goes to show you that, you know, Trump is the Rorschach test of the Republican Party right now. I mean, what you see is whatever you want to see, I think. You know, this was the first time we've seen him elbow to elbow with Jeb Bush and Scott Walker and all these other guys, and we got to see how he does. And I think everybody is sort of waiting for the shoe to drop on the whole Trump phenomenon. I don't know if it will be from last night. I sort of don't think it will be. And then the question becomes, well, when is it? I mean, if you can sort of have nonspecific, rambling answers, if you can, you know, refuse to support the Republican nominee, if you can become the sort of villain of the room in this big arena, and still become, you know, soar past everybody else in the polls, what is it that ends up deflating that bubble? And I just don't know the answer to that.
We'll get into some of the non-Trump candidates, too. But first, as an event, as sometimes we think of political events, debates and others, is a little boring, a little stodgy, a little predictable. This wasn't any of those things, I don't think. This was a quick-paced, lively debate with a lot of candidates getting to speak their piece.
Oh, this was amazing. I mean, this was the most entertaining television I have seen in a very long time. I you know, I found myself sort of on the edge of my seat every time Trump would get to talk, and you just never knew what he was going to say. This was just a remarkable display. And, you know, usually in these debates, but what we expect to see, especially in the first debate, is candidates kind of just giving their stump speech, introducing themselves to their voters, many of whom don't know a lot about them, saying who they are, their biography, their values, you know, what they want to do in office, and kind of ignoring the question. And, you know, Trump aside for the moment, I mean, these guys really got into it with each other. You know, there was a couple exchanges between Chris Christie and Rand Paul, Chris Christie and Mike Huckabee. I mean, they were funny. I thought it was remarkable television.
People are going to be watching polls closely nationally and in early primary states. Did anything happen last night that you think is going to move a candidate up or down in the polls significantly?
You know, I don't think we're going to see large movement, because I think, you know, I think there's just too many things going on right now. The race is sort of too fluid that if we did see large movement, it would be hard to kind of pin it to one moment in the debate or one performance in the debate. But that said, I mean, there was, as you mentioned, up top, I mean, there was a huge audience for this thing. I mean, and you got to think some of those were just political junkies like me, but a number of them were probably Republican primary voters who are kind of trying to decide who they want to support in this election. I think I saw somewhere that more people watched the debate last night than actually voted in the 2012 Republican primaries. But I don't think anybody really sort of shot themselves in the foot and was disqualifying for president. And, you know, some were better than others, and we can get into that. But I thought pretty much everybody kind of played the type, including our friend Donald Trump.
Talking to David Friedlander, a contributing writer for the Daily Beast, about last night's Republican presidential debate. Debates, really, you can join in. What did you think? 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. A lot of questions directed specifically to a particular candidate. A lot of interest here in Wisconsin to Governor Scott Walker. Here's a pointed question that moderator Megan Kelly asked him.
Governor Walker, you've consistently said that you want to make abortion illegal, even in cases of rape, incest, or to save the life of the mother. You recently signed an abortion law in Wisconsin that does have an exception for the mother's life, but you are on record as having objected to it. Would you really let a mother die rather than have an abortion? And with 83% of the American public in favor of a life exception, are you two out of the mainstream on this issue to win the general election?
Well, I'm pro-life. I've always been pro-life. And I've got a position I think is consistent with many Americans out there in that I believe that that is an unborn child that's in need of protection out there. And I've said many a time that that unborn child can be protected, and there are many other alternatives that will also protect the life of that mother. That's been consistently proven.
David, your thoughts on Governor Walker's answer to that question?
I mean, I thought that was an incredibly pointed way of putting the question from Megyn Kelly here. I mean, I think that, you know, people, there had been some grumbling in Republican ranks that there were liberals who had been moderating these debates in 2012. And she sort of laid it out there. I mean, does that mean you're going to let the mother die? You know, I think Scott Walker probably didn't do himself any favors in a general election there. But I think he also sort of didn't answer the yes or no that was put to him in a sort of clever way. And you know, he's going to, I mean, I think I'm consistent on this view is what he said, and I'm pro-life. And, you know, obviously the cheers in the audience were there for him.
A lot of strong pro-life views in both debates yesterday. A lot of times in a general election, candidates try to moderate from that. It seems like the tone most candidates are taking, that might be hard to do in a general election. They're putting it right out there on an issue like abortion.
I don't know how you walk away or, you know, moderate your stance on that. I mean, that was pretty tough, you know, questioning from Kelly there. You know, are you willing to let the mother die? And you know, I mean, he essentially sort of shrugged and said, you know, if it's between the mother and the unborn child, I'm on the side of the unborn child. You know, I think this is what Republicans wanted to avoid, was having these kind of answers to these kind of questions. But they kind of just walked right into it and, you know, head first in a way.
Now, you mentioned earlier, nobody you thought rocketed to the front in this. Nobody ruined their campaigns here, but some you said did better than others. Who did you see maybe exceeding expectations, helping themselves in this debate?
Yeah, I thought Marco Rubio was very good. I thought he was very crisp and seems very presidential, and that's maybe the first bar you have to clear in these debates. Is just someone who I can see as a plausible nominee. You know, he's young, he hasn't been in the Senate very long, so I think he needed to do that, and he did. I think John Kasich came across how he wanted to come across, as very unscripted, likable. He had that sort of hometown crowd behind him, cheering him on. You know, and others kind of did what I thought they sort of needed to do. You know, Chris Christie needed to show his toughness, and he kind of uses Rand Paul as a punching bag to show he's tough. And if I had to, you know, people that maybe underperformed, and it would just be slight, I thought that Jeb Bush, who, when you sort of see Jeb on the stump, he's a really bright guy. He knows the nuances of policy in and out of anyone I've ever seen in politics. But he seemed sort of mangled his answers last night. He seemed like he knew what he wanted to say, but he got the sort of order of what he wanted to say it all wrong. And I thought he came out a little flat. And other people, I mean, there were so many people on stage, you sort of didn't hear from them for a very long time and wondered what happened to them. I thought, you know, Ben Carson, I kind of, my eyes kind of glazed over when he talked. A lot of Huckabee, I thought the same thing.
You mentioned Ohio Governor John Kasich with the home field advantage. Here's one exchange. Megyn Kelly asked him for an explanation of why he accepted Medicaid expansion funds over the Affordable Care Act, obviously a taboo issue for Republicans. Here was his response.
Well, first of all, Megyn, you should know that that President Reagan expanded Medicaid 3 or 4 times. Secondly, I had an opportunity to bring resources back to Ohio to do what? To treat the mentally ill. 10,000 of them sit in our prisons. It costs $22,500 a year to keep them in prison. I'd rather get them their medication so they could lead a decent life. Secondly, we are rehabbing the drug addicted. 80% of the people in our prisons have addiction problems. We now treat them in the prisons, release them in the community, and the recidivism rate is 10%, and everybody across this country knows that the tsunami of drugs is threatening their very families. So we're treating them and getting them on their feet. And finally, the working poor, instead of them having come into the emergency rooms, where it costs more, where they're sicker, and we end up paying, we brought a program in here to make sure that people could get on their feet.
Kasich squeaked in the polls, David, but he was there. He got to say his piece. He's regarded as the most moderate in this field. Did he make his case that he can be a convincing candidate?
He has a very long way to go. I mean, he would, you know, this is a very deep and talented field of Republicans. Candidates. And any other year, he would be in the top tier, I think. You know, he's from Ohio. He was in Congress. He's a former talk show host. Now he's a very popular governor. He won his reelection, you know, by something like 30 or 40 points in the ultimate swing state in the nation. But, you know, a lot of things are going to have to go right for John Kasich to really make a difference. I mean, Jeb will have to falter. Probably a couple other people would have to falter, too. But, you know, he's running as this sort of different kind of Republican, quote-unquote, you know, one who cares about social programs, who cares about addressing the poor. And that's really not what a Republican primary audience wants to hear. They want to hear the most conservative people, and that's who they vote for. These are the most committed conservative Republican voters. And so when you sort of are running against the party in a way, which is his shtick, it's a little bit Chris Christie's shtick, it's a little bit Jeb Bush's shtick, you know, you're kind of running cross purposes to the very people whose vote you're going after there.
We're talking to David Friedlander with the Daily Beast, looking at last night's Republican debate on Fox News. We'd like to hear from you. Did you watch? Who do you think made the best case if you're a Republican primary voter, maybe down in Iowa yourself? Did it help you make up your mind about the candidates? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're continuing our conversation with David Friedlander, contributing writer at The Daily Beast, about the first Republican debate on last night.
You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your reactions or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Straight to our callers. We've got Troy on the line in Milwaukee. Troy, hi.
Hello. I am not a Republican, but I did watch debate because, you know, I'm always curious to, you know, the way things are going. And I just have to say, even though I'm not a Republican, I was impressed with Trump. And I think the one thing that, you know, I really liked is that transparency and genuineness that he has. And he doesn't really throw a lot of statistics and facts and, you know, throw a lot of things out there that we're sick of hearing. You know, he kept it pretty genuine. And I like the fact that he was basically not really busting out his own party members, but being very transparent about how the process works, saying, you know, I would buy politicians. And, you know, and putting that out there, people know this, and they like hearing that because it just keeps it very transparent. And I think the Democrats could use a Donald Trump.
Troy, thanks a lot for the call. David, I mean, he really summed up the appeal for a lot of people of Donald Trump, didn't he?
I think that's exactly right. I mean, everyone sort of thinks, right, that politics is fake, that everybody just talks in sound bites, that politicians are bought and sold. And Trump sort of says all the things everyone kind of thinks but is afraid to say. And he says it to other politicians standing next to him. I mean, that was a great moment, as your call alluded to. I've given money to each of you, you know, and I got things in return from it. And I mean, Trump, and the fact that he doesn't sort of pretend to have policy solutions for vexing problems. You know, his policy solution is Donald Trump. Right. And even though many of his ideas are sort of they're all over the map, they're unrealistic, they're borrowed from Democratic ideas. So, he's really a sort of force of nature out there.
Troy, thanks for the call. We'll go to Mary now in Gaze Mills. Mary, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I watched the debate last night also, and my favorite candidate is Mr. Huckabee. It's because he was right on the money regarding the pro-life issue, and I think your analyst is flat wrong regarding that's an issue that the Republicans should shy away from. In fact, the more the truth is spoken about the life of the unborn person growing inside of a mother's womb, the more people rise to support that. And it's well known that there's a I regret my abortion movement that's out there today. A lot of women are wounded by that, and they're afraid to speak up because the prominent media still speaks of it as a right to kill your child.
Mary, thanks for the call. And Huckabee, do you think for people making the case for the pro-life movement, David, that Huckabee really is going to stand out for them as he did for our caller?
Well, you know, I think what the caller says is interesting there. And my point is just that the sort of politics being where they are now, is the nation is sort of generally pro-choice with certain restrictions, but they're not, you know, they're not rape and incest pro-life, and they're not health of the mother pro-life. And, you know, politics on this could move, I think, relatively quickly. I think younger people are maybe a little bit more pro-life than previous generations. There's a polling on that. But, you know, certainly if you all and just, you know, the Planned Parenthood videos that are coming out could also move public opinion on this. But yes, I mean, you know, if you are pro-life, Huckabee is your person. But I mean, I think everyone there has pretty much had, you know, identical opinions about the life issue.
Thanks a lot for the call. We're talking about last night's Republican presidential debates with David Friedlander. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Jennifer is with us next in Cassville. Jennifer, hi.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good. What do you think?
I did watch the debate last night, and I was a bit appalled about the fact that every single one of these guys seems to be a climate change denier, and that all they want to see is a deregulation to the point of polluting our planet to death. And maybe that's how they'll get the climate to change, is by attrition of human beings. Who knows? But I think as far as the social question of Governor Kasich,
helping the mentally ill. Bravo to him. If I ended up having him as my president, me being a Democrat, maybe I wouldn't feel quite so wanting to move to Canada.
Jennifer, thanks for the call. I mean, that could be a problem for Kasich, couldn't it? I think, and I've seen elsewhere, not just from Jennifer, David, Democrats saying, hey, this guy seems okay, which isn't the kind of thing you necessarily want to hear when you're trying to win the Republican primary.
Yeah, exactly. Being the Republican favorite Democrat, or Democrat favorite Republican, is not exactly the winning ticket there. You know, the question for Kasich, as was put in last night, you know, if he's going to invoke God and religiosity in expanding Medicaid, why isn't he just a Democrat, and why doesn't he expand every social program? Because that would be the sort of religious Christian thing to do, and I'm not sure he really had an answer for that.
Jennifer, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Jocelyn in Sheboygan. Jocelyn, hi.
Yes, hi. I had to listen to it on the radio, and I really listened carefully, and I think that as far as Walker is concerned, he was bland. He talked like he was so over-rehearsed and like as if he was reading it. That's why he talked so fast. He wanted to make sure he didn't make a mistake. It reminded me of Eddie Murphy in that one movie where he was trying to con somebody. Also, I thought Kasich had the most empathy, and if having empathy or not having empathy is a badge of honor for the Republicans, I mean, they all sounded the same. They said the same thing, scripted.
Thanks for the call, Jocelyn. I'm running short on time. I want to get David in on this. Did you read this, or did you see other people reading Governor Walker's performance as sounding stiff or over-rehearsed?
I mean, I thought Walker was a little flat. I mean, Walker sort of has two things he has to do, right? On the one hand, he is this Midwestern nice guy, and on the other hand, he's the guy with a backbone who stared down the unions and stared down the university system. So he sort of caught between these sort of two poles, and I think he kind of, depending on the audience, veers between which sort of Scott Walker we see in a way. And as for the Kasich point, I mean, just to say, I think the issue with him is that Republicans don't want to hear that they're being unfair, ungodly, unchristian when they cut taxes, and that's what and balance budgets, and that's what Kasich is telling them.
As we wrap up, David, do you think the format of this debate, the style of it, is going to shake things up maybe for future debates on Fox or other networks?
Well, I think just having Trump there changes anything we've all ever known about debating. I mean, it seems as if Republicans are anxious and ready, excited about these candidates. You could kind of feel the energy in the room, I think. The one problem they have is there's just so many of them that there aren't very many options about how to structure these debates.
And as you say, there are a lot of them, 10 in that debate, 7 in the earlier debate that we didn't talk about too much. A long time to go still until votes start being cast. Do you think that the field will be winnowed before Iowa caucus?
You know, just at the margins, I think. I don't think it'll be winnowed by much. And the reason is because typically candidates drop out of these races when they run out of money. And in this new era of post-Citizens United and their super PACs and all the money in politics right now, none of these guys are going to run out of money anytime soon. So I think they're all going to hang around and see how they do. And I think we'll have a pretty crowded field up until the convention.
David, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
That was David Friedlander, contributing writer at The Daily Beast, talking about last night's Republican presidential debate. You can keep sharing your reactions on the Central Time Facebook page.
I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.